This podcast has been edited for brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Backers of a new proposed carbon tax say it will have many benefits. They say it will significantly cut the state's carbon emissions. It will cut electric rates for all Vermonters. It will stimulate the Vermont economy by promoting in-state renewable energy projects. And it will provide special rebates for middle-income people and those Vermonters who live in the more rural parts of the state. Chittenden Senator Chris Pearson says the plan is great for electric customers, but House Speaker Mitzi Johnson is very concerned about the impact that this plan will have in the rural parts of Vermont.
And by the end of it, it lands us having the cheapest electric rates in all of the Northeast by about 25%.
I can't support a plan that doesn't offer better alternatives for our rural a rural economy that really hurt people that are forced to drive long distances or forced to heat the second oldest housing stock in the country, I think are a problem.
Has the time come for Vermont lawmakers to pass this plan? That's the question for our guest today. With us, Dan Barlow, who is policy director at Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility, a group that strongly supports this carbon tax plan. Also with us, Caledonia Senator Joe Benning, who has some serious concerns and questions about this proposal. Great to have both of you here. Thanks for being on the program.
Thanks, Bob.
Thanks, Bob.
So, Dan, let's start off by taking a look at the details of the plan so everybody knows what we're talking about. It phases this tax in. It's a tax of $5 a ton on the wholesale price of fossil fuels. That would be imposed every year over an 8-year period. This would add roughly 5 cents to the price of gas, a gallon of gas or heating oil, and it would cap out at about 40 cents. The new tax would raise about $300 million a year when it's fully implemented, and then all this money under this plan would be returned to Vermonters in several ways. Electric rates for all customers would be reduced by as much as 25%, and some Vermonters would be eligible for several monthly rebates. One rebate would be available for people with incomes less than 400% of the federal poverty level. That's roughly $40,000 for an individual or $90,000 for a family of four. And there's a second rebate for Vermonters who live in the more rural parts of the state. These would be available for individuals with incomes up to $75,000 a year or couples with $150,000. So, Dan, why is this approach good for Vermont to take at this time?
Well, VBSR sees climate change as one of the biggest threats, not only to our environment, but our economy as well. So the Essex plan, which was the brainchild of a group of VBSR businesses teaming up with some low-income advocates in the state to look at this issue of how can we move away from fossil fuels as an economy and reap the economic benefits of moving to cleaner local energy sources. So we see the Essex plan as a Vermont-specific economic development opportunity. And for VBSR, it achieves three things. It would grow local jobs and grow the local economy here in Vermont by offering the cleanest and the cheapest electricity rates in New England. Number two, it would prioritize vulnerable and middle-class Vermonters by not only reducing their electricity rates but also sending them rebate checks on a monthly level. And number three, and this is an issue I think that doesn't get as much attention, it would reduce carbon emissions in Vermont and put the state back on the track to meet our climate goals.
So there are some lawmakers who are sympathetic to this concept, but they feel it's a big mistake for Vermont to go it alone, that there has to be either a regional or a national approach here. What about those concerns?
I recognize those concerns. And 2 points. Clearly, there is no leadership on the national level. The United States is the only country in the world right now who's not part of the Paris Climate Accord. And Washington, D.C. has given up leadership on climate change. So we cannot expect Washington, D.C. to lead on this issue. Number two, there are carbon pricing bills in other New England states. There's going to be a bill in New Hampshire. There are bills in Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. And the $40 per ton price that we hit in year 8 in this proposal is matched in those other states as well. So there's a possibility we can move together as a region.
Would you link it to having it be approved by other states?
I think Vermont can lead here and show other New England states that we can grow the economy and fight climate change, and they're going to follow suit and pass these bills too.
Joe, what are some of the major concerns that you have with this plan?
Well, first, Bob, let me say great afternoon to all of you from the wonderful new Eye in the Sky studio booth here in downtown St. Johnsbury, which we in Linden call the Big City. Frankly, to the rest of the state, we are about as rural as you can possibly get. But let me back up to the very beginning when I was first elected to the legislature. I could go around every forum and recite a brief paragraph from the Vermont Constitution and tell people that's why I was running. And that paragraph can be found in Article 18, and I'm going to recite it to you now because I have it memorized. That frequent recurrence to fundamental principles and a firm adherence to justice, moderation, temperance, industry, and frugality are absolutely necessary to preserve the blessings of liberty and keep government free. The people ought, therefore, to pay particular attention to these points in the choice of officers and representatives, and have a right, in a legal way, to exact a due and constant regard to them from their legislators and magistrates when making and executing such laws as are necessary for the good government of this state. So the first question that launches into my mind is this legislation necessary, or is it a good idea to some folks to have this happen and try to make Vermont a leader in the nation? Let me say that I represent a constituency that would be so impacted by this proposal that it is almost unbelievable to me that somebody in the legislative environment would be proposing it unless they just don't understand local numbers. And let me give you some of my local numbers. I own an office building in downtown Lindenville. It has 16 rooms in it, and it has a 200-gallon oil gas tank in the basement. I have an electric bill that runs me about $65 a month. And in fact, this morning it was $64 a month. I just opened it up. And I'm paying Lindenville Electric Company 14.953 cents per kilowatt hour. Now, as luck would have it, I just happened to notice that there was a Burlington Free Press article on February 1st, which indicated that Vermont households spend about $95 a month on electricity. Well, that's about $20, almost $30 more than I am, which means there is a great disparity between electric rates in this state. So the numbers are going to be fluctuating all over the place when you go to try to put these together. But I want to give you my personal example of what will happen to me. I also own a small home in the town of Linden, and we have a 200-gallon gas tank. We are presently paying $2.40 per gallon, which comes out to about $480 if I'm filling up that tank, which I do about every 3 weeks in the wintertime. I drive a Subaru Outback base model. It has an 18-gallon gas tank. If I fill up that tank four times a month, which is quite common, because I have to travel literally to every place I go, be it for Senate purposes or for work purposes. My work, I'm an attorney, and I travel from, well, you name just about any courthouse in the state, and I've been there, and I do that on a fairly regular basis. And with the Senate position that I hold, I am all over the state trying to meet my obligations. If I fill that four times a month, that comes up to me spending about $187 right now on gas. That $480 gas oil tank bill comes along with that for a total of $667 a month. Starting in 2018, if the Essex plan is put forth, I'm going to be paying about $10 extra on my fuel oil and about $2.88 extra on my gasoline expenses. So figure about $12, almost $13. As that plan advances through the years, out to the year, I believe it's 2026, those costs would rise to $80 a month for my oil tank and $23.04 per month for my gasoline expenses, and that would equate to $103.04 per month added on to my bills. If my present electric bill is only $65 a month, I don't understand how this is going to help me in some fashion. And now we're talking, well, we're going to offset that with rebates for me here in the kingdom. Well, who's going to monitor that system? We haven't had any discussion yet about what bureaucracy is going to be necessary to do the calculations for every single Vermont household across this state and compare them to every single municipal or commercial entity that is selling electricity and figure out who is making how much money. Those things all don't just happen automatically. Somebody has to monitor all of that tax revenue stream and the reimbursements that flow thereafter. And this plan so far has not talked about any of that. In the end, what are we going to get for our efforts here? We have several problems. We have no electric refueling station infrastructure throughout this state, and especially here in the Northeast Kingdom. Virtually all of our constituents here are driving gasoline-powered cars, which remain much cheaper than electric cars. Our housing stock is amongst the oldest in the state, and virtually every single person that I know has oil for heat. Some have propane, some are moving towards pellets, but the bottom line is the vast majority of us are still using oil for heat. With the additional bureaucracy that you are having to come up with to administer all that and figure out who's getting what, I come back to my original paragraph that I read to you. Is this necessary for Vermont, or is it simply an idea that makes people feel good and or superior to their neighbors for not doing the job that they're supposed to be doing? And what does this burden actually do in our fight against climate change? Well, I would submit to you that if we eliminated virtually every person in Vermont from the face of the earth today, we'd have no carbon footprint whatsoever, but we would also have no registerable impact on climate change. And that, for me, is a critical question in all of this mix. Now, we legislators were brought to the State House on November 30th, and we were given a long statement about the state of Vermont from various presenters, and one of them was Tom Cavett, the state's economist. And he told us that we are now experiencing the 101st consecutive month of economic recovery, which is the third longest in history. And the primary drivers for that have been low energy prices. If we jack up those prices at this point in time, we are going to have a negative impact on our economy. There's no question about it. For every resident of the Northeast Kingdom that must travel for work, which is virtually everybody, that's going to be a direct impact on every single person. And I can't support this legislation. I am very glad to hear that Dan understands this might be a better discussion at the national level. I would argue this is absolutely a discussion that should be having at the national level, because it will force automobile dealerships and people who are involved in the business of energy production and delivery to start thinking about different ways to make that happen. And if you're going to have a serious impact on climate change, using the entire population of the country makes a heck of a lot more sense to me than the little tiny group of people who are within the narrow geographical confines of the state of Vermont.
All right. Let's see if, Dan, let's get some response to this. Joe is saying that there'd be a lot of people in the Northeast Kingdom, his part of the state, for whom this is going to be an economic loser, that they're going to end up paying more money than they will getting back either in lower electric rates and the rebates. What about that?
I recognize the senator's argument there, and I have a lot of respect for the senator and the work he does. And I think his a preamble about the Vermont Constitution speaks highly to how he does his job here in Vermont. But I would disagree. The Essex plan responds to some legitimate criticisms of early carbon pricing plans here in Vermont by specifically putting in rebates for low-income Vermonters and rural Vermonters. So I think looking at these numbers, and I think we need to further study this a little more here in the state and run some more scenarios, that for a lot of low-income Vermonters, this could be an economic winner, because while their gasoline and home heating costs may go up, their electricity rates are going to go down. And this is going to create incentives for newer technologies here in Vermont.
Let's go to our callers and start off with Nick in Montpelier. Hi, Nick. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks for having me. My question is, maybe kind of simple. You know, clearly President Trump and Congress are not doing anything on climate change. And in fact, they're moving us backward. So although I agree that this conversation needs to be happening at the federal level, there's clearly nothing going to happen in the next couple of years. And so is it not true that states really need to step up and act? And if that is the case, then what is the holdup here? You know, why are most of our legislators and our governor not stepping up to the plate, rising to the occasion, and really just considering this, actually looking at the plan?
Okay, Nick, thanks very much for your phone call. Joe, we also have a couple of emails here from folks who want to know if you think that climate change is a serious issue, and if you do, how do you think it should be dealt with?
Well, first, let me thank Nick for calling in, and I think you have a legitimate question that needs to be answered, and I'll do that in just a second. Bob, to answer your email responses, I absolutely do believe climate change is an issue and that we have to be dealing with it. But committing economic suicide as a small state is not the way to go about that. You are not going to improve the lot of climate change arguing if you are going to simply have a very, very, very tiny, tiny population trying to correct the problem. We have often been told by various legislators that we have superstar legislation at our federal level. If our congressmen and our two senators, who have a world of experience, cannot drive that argument at the federal government level, and I don't care who's in power in the White House, if they can't be doing that in the Congress, then perhaps it's time to change those legislators. If that is, in fact, one of our greatest problems right now, climate change, we need to have people in Washington who are able to articulate the message and drive the conversation. If that's not happening, we and every other state around us needs to change who the players are that are making that conversation.
So, Joe, are you saying, I want to make sure I understand what you're saying, are you saying that climate change is a serious problem, but even if Vermont did all that it could to reduce carbon emissions, it's just a drop in the bucket of the total problem, and therefore that approach should not be taken?
I don't want to see Vermont commit economic suicide while trying to address a very serious problem.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Bob in Stratford. Hey, Bob, welcome to the program.
Hi. Actually, it's John in Stratford.
Okay. Hey, John.
I would tend to agree. You know, I think it's not just the Northeast Kingdom problem. It's all up and down our borders. You know, you have lots of small general stores with gas pumps. People are just going to drive to New Hampshire and buy their gas. It won't do any difference. You know, if we want to take action, we can model it on the RGGI program that bind the Northeast states together to deal with climate change from their power plants. We could, you know, but it should be at a big enough level that it has an impact, in that it is, Joe says, it doesn't commit economic suicide. If we wanted to take a symbolic action, I would suggest a tax on airline tickets, a Vermont tax on airline tickets. Airlines are perhaps one of the biggest carbon polluters, and airline tickets are, for the most part, a discretionary spending. And I think if we wanted to take a symbolic action about carbon, that having a Vermont tax on airline tickets that, instead of being revenue neutral, could go to help cleaning up Lake Champlain instead of trying to put it on a parcel fee or some property tax, which are already too high.
Carbon all right. Tax. John, thank you very much for your comments. Dan, I want to get to the central issue that Joe is raising, which is Vermont could do all this stuff. And given the size of our state population, it's really not going to make that big an impact on the whole climate change issue. So why should Vermont go it alone?
Clearly, Vermont's not going to solve climate change alone, but we can show leadership in this area. In fact, the governor and leadership in the legislature has committed to some pretty serious climate change reduction goals. And the reality is that we are not going to meet those goals without a proposal like the Essex Plan. In fact, you know, we are already above our 1990 levels right now when it comes to CO2 emissions. And I want to push back against something that the senator said about economic suicide, which I think is a completely unfair characterization of this plan. Every single independent analysis of carbon pricing, even specifically in Vermont, has shown economic growth and between 2,000 and 6,000 net new jobs here in the state. That's real economic development. At the State House, we often talk about how there's no silver bullet for the economy, to improve the economy. I think the very least this is a silver-plated bullet that can improve the economy and move vulnerable Vermonters forward away from a fossil fuel economy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Today we're looking at a proposed carbon tax known as the Essex Plan. With us today, Caledonia Senator Joe Benning, who has some serious concerns about this proposal. Also, Dan Barlow, Policy Director at Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility. It's a group that strongly supports this approach. A lot of folks want to weigh in on this issue, so let's start with Sandy in Middlesex. Hi, Sandy. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. So I'm very pleased to see the legislature address climate change, and I'm so pleased that this plan was advanced by businesses and low-income advocates. So I'm not really understanding what Senator Benning is calling economic suicide. So I guess I'd like maybe Dan Barlow to address what the business and low-income benefits really are.
Thank you very much for that question. And, you know, again, as I said earlier, every independent economic analysis of the Essex plan and other carbon pricing plans on Vermont have showed economic growth between 2,000 and 6,000 net new jobs and an increase in the state domestic product. The future of the economy, especially the Vermont economy, is low fossil fuel intensive. And we've seen a transformation in our business community where they are doing efficiency work. They are looking to use more renewables that are generated here in Vermont. In fact, I have a lot of businesses that are already beginning to tackle the employee commuting issue and looking at options of can they buy an electric vehicle and lease it to an employee for $1 a year so they can begin tackling employee commuting CO2.
Joe, the idea of economic suicide, Sandy asked about that. We heard Dan talking about the growth in jobs. He thinks it's going to be an economic plus for the state. How do you respond to that?
Well, Bob, there's a couple of things. First off, Sandy, I appreciate you calling in. And part of my concern stems from where I live and the people that I interact with on a daily basis. So let's take Paul Keenan, who owns a small place called Paul's Whistle Stop, right literally on the Connecticut River, in downtown McIndoo Falls. It's a one-pump gas station, and he has the bulk of his income is going to be coming from people who stop there to buy gasoline, maybe a quart of milk or whatever on the way home. But that's how he is making his living. So what's going to happen when we phase out his main source of income? Where is his new job going to be? Up in Lindenville at Nick's Gas and Go, we have a woman who owns the place with, I think, three or four other employees. Where are they going to go? Where is my local fuel dealer going to go? Now, when Dan talks about some economic impact analysis that he's got at his disposal, bringing 2,000 to 6,000 jobs into the economy, what are you going to do to replace the local people that you meet with on a daily basis who are going to suddenly be out of the jobs that they've been used to? All of our fuel oil dealers are local people. All of those folks who own gas stations and convenience stores, they're local people. I have heard one of the drivers of this argument say, this is money that's going out of state or out of country. And I have to look back and say, well, wait a minute. These are real people that I meet daily on my way to the post office who have jobs here and are spending their money after earning their living through these fuel systems in our communities. What are we going to do with them? Where are they going to go? How am I in Lindenville going to get from Lindenville to Guildhall, for instance, for court, or St. Johnsbury, or Newport, or over to the State House in Montpelier? We don't have the infrastructure in place that enables us to have mass transportation anytime and anywhere we want to go. These are concerns that are going to drive the counter-argument to this discussion. But there are other concerns that have to be added into the mix. All of our fuel deliveries come with a tax. In fact, several taxes. Some of them are for our roads and bridges. How are we going to replace that income stream and take care of our roads and bridges? We have to have a tax that does that somewhere along the way. And whatever tax you have to impose, if it's going to be attached to an electric infrastructure, That's going to decrease the revenue stream that would normally be available as a kickback to provide rebates or subsidies to people who are going to be on the short end of this stick. We have taxes that are going to promote pollution mitigation from these same taxes. Where are we going to get things for low-income witherization? What contribution is being made currently to the general fund? I think it's about $10 to $15 million for the general fund, low-income weatherization, pollution mitigation, all coming out of the sales tax, the fuel tax, and the pollution tax. You've got to replace those somehow. And all of those jobs that are associated with them will be lost if we don't. So I am struggling to understand how a community that I know is going to be impacted by this in such a way that it's suddenly going to improve the lot of everybody around me. I don't see that happening.
I appreciate the opportunity to talk about the economic development potential here. Vermont right now, and this is a state number from the Department of Public Service, spends $2.3 billion every year on fossil fuels. It's estimated about 80% of that money goes right out of state, right outside the borders of Vermont. And so what VBSR sees is an opportunity to do to our energy sector what we've started to do with our food sector and localize some of that. And, you know, the economic development potential of bringing, let's say, $1 billion of that energy spending and keeping it here in Vermont or the region itself, as opposed to sending this money not only out of state but to parts of the world where there are bad actors, that has a lot of potential for Vermont.
Couldn't you make the same argument, Dan, about electricity? I mean, you're trying to switch people over from fossil fuels and rely more on electricity. I believe a huge majority of Vermont residences get their electricity from Green Mountain Power, which is owned by Hydro-Québec. Isn't that money going out of state as well?
You know, right now we have two utilities that are 100% renewable here in Vermont, Washington Electric Co-op and Burlington Electric. And Green Mountain Power is about 50% renewable right now. And over the next few years, I think we'll see more generation of local renewable energy here in Vermont. And quite frankly, I know I know VBSR would like to see more development of renewable energy in Vermont. So I think, you know, there are opportunities down the road to replace some of that out-of-state energy with local in-state produced energy.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Scott, who's calling from Johnson. Hi, Scott. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me. My question, I think, already got answered because I was going to ask if this new carbon tax would compete with taxes from AOT for highways and bridges in our petroleum cleanup fund. So it sounds like that's been thought out. So I'll change my tune a little bit, and after dealing with Tropical Storm Irene and seeing the costs that were laid out by the state of Vermont, as well as all our businesses, I look at this as prevention, and prevention is usually a lot cheaper than fixing the mess due to storms that have been increasing in their strength over the last 10 years or so. Thank you.
All right, Scott, thanks very much. Let's turn to John in Richmond. Hey, John, what's on your mind today?
Hello, Bob. I guess I was wondering, and I'm coming at this as a neophyte to this whole process, but it seems like the carbon plan deals with the production side, where you're actually getting your energy from. But it doesn't address the consumption side. How come none of – because what you're doing is a cost shift. You're shifting it and subsidizing the cost of the energy consumed. And again, this is how I'm understanding it. How come – or why isn't – are we considering something that would help rebuild or restructure the infrastructure, the insulation in the second oldest housing stock in the country, the furnaces or whatever we are using to produce the heat during the winter. It seems to me that's an investment. If we're just cost shifting, we're not doing anything to change the consumption. So I wondered if you guys could address that.
Sure.
That's a great question. And, you know, the Essex plan reduces rates, but it doesn't eliminate them. So I think this actually makes things like conservation and efficiency measures more attractive to the consumer.
Well, we got this email, Dan, from MB, who wrote, if you lower electric bills, people will use more electricity. What's the incentive for on-site renewables?
You know, I think people don't like spending money. So if they don't have to leave their lights on at their house, they're not going to do that. And the incentive to move to efficiency measures is still there because, you know, again, we're not we're reducing their rates. We're not eliminating them.
Let's talk to Dan. Joe, go ahead.
You know, first off, I think I agree with both Scott for prevention purposes and John, who's concerned about consumption purposes. The bottom line for all of us as human beings is we are going to look for the most attractive thing we can in order to get by on a day-to-day basis. I live 18 miles from the New Hampshire border. If Vermont enacts this tax and my actual gas bill is going to go up by $100 a month, where do you think I'm going to go? I haven't replaced my furnace or my gas tank. I still have to drive the miles and heat my house. I'm going over to New Hampshire. That's why I see this as an economic disaster for us. All of the people that have the similar situation and setup that I do are going to do exactly the same thing. It's an invitation for all of us along the Connecticut River to go across the river and get the things that we actually need on a day-to-day basis. The discussion is much more intelligent if it's being done at the national level, because I do believe climate change is an issue. And the more people you have in the argument to try to make the change, that makes sense to me. It does not make sense to me to do it from the small geographical confines of Vermont, even if we want to demonstrate that we are somehow superior to everyone else that doesn't do it.
Dan, we got this email that says, how will this plan address those of us who have made a sizable investment in solar power based on the current electric rates? If the state artificially lowers the market rate of electricity, it will effectively increase the amount of time needed to get a positive return on that investment. What about that?
You know, for solar companies, solar customers and net metering customers, if your bill drops below zero under this Essex plan, you would actually get a check back from the utility. So I think this, again, incentivizes more households to go solar and to do efficiency work.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Dan in Burlington. Hi, Dan. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you. First of all, I want to say thanks for having this discussion today. It's such a pivotal thing to be talking about. I'm coming on the phone representing a group called the Vermont Climate and Health Alliance here in Vermont. So we have about 45 vets, docs, nurses, et cetera. And what we want to try to bring into this whole conversation is that climate change is very much it's a staggering health issue. It really can be regarded as an existential threat. And there's a huge void, and we need to step into that void. So we see this idea, the carbon pricing idea, as a cross-cutting way to do that. We think it could be done fairly. We see support across the board, including a paper that came out not long ago called The Conservative Case for Carbon Dividends from James Baker and others. So we just want to vocalize our support and also note that the health costs of climate change are going to be massive. And the first people who will be hit by that and hardest will be lower-income folks. So I wanted to throw those points into the discussion. Thank you.
Well, Dan, let me ask you a question. One of the points that Joe Benning has been making today is that Vermont could go to zero carbon emissions tomorrow, and it won't really have much impact on the whole problem across the country or across the globe. So why should Vermont go first?
Yeah, I mean, I understand the point. I think what we have to recognize is the federal government is not going to step in here. It's just not going to happen in the near term. It's hard to imagine long term. So someone has to step into that void and provide some leadership. There are other places in the globe that are doing carbon pricing. And the Essex plan in particular is a very smart and feasible way that Vermont can step into this in a way that I think will actually grow the economy and do a lot of wonderful short-term things. Of course, we are all want to recognize that we expect the implementation would be done in a way that's smart and fair and thoroughly thought out. And there's no better legislature than the Vermont legislature to carry out that kind of idea and bring it to a great conclusion.
Okay, Dan, thanks very much for your phone call. Let's talk to Daniel, who is calling from Montpelier. Hey, Daniel, what's on your mind today?
Hi. From what I've heard, it seems like we've reached a political impasse. I mean, Dan Barlow has studies and Joe Benning has his anecdotes. But most recently, the governor's handpicked Climate Action Commission has recommended that the governor support a study of carbon pricing options. We can actually know how this would affect the state. So my question is, would Senator Benning support such a study so we could get beyond the political bickering and figure out once and for all if this concept would be good for us here in Vermont?
Daniel, that's a great question. I'd actually like to get responses from both of our guests. Joe, what about a study so you'd have everyone could see what the impact might be?
Bob, I don't have any problem studying anything, although I'll pause to note that apparently the legislature has asked for so many studies that the people who have been asked to study don't have the resources to produce the study. So that's becoming a more common theme. And Daniel, thank you for calling in. And let me say, we're not really bickering here. There's actually common ground if you listen carefully to what's going on here. We all believe the climate is a problem. We all believe that it has to be addressed. My problem is how we're trying to address it. And this is a theme that is critical to this discussion, but is so much more important that it be done on a federal level that I get totally frustrated when people can't actually think about their neighbors and what it means to live in the small state that we do, especially those of us in the more rural sections of this state. We have options from a federal level that could drive not only the conversation in the right direction, but actually produce results. We can't do that at this level, as much as we want to say we can. If the Essex plan is passed, electric rates are going to rise. They have to, because the amount being consumed, electricity, is going to vastly rise. Everything that we do, from home heating to transportation, suddenly getting shifted into the electric grid, means we are going to have to improve the infrastructure, increase the number of people who are dealing with that problem. And what we're going to end up paying for in the long run is a very great cost that will produce virtually nothing in the argument about climate change.
Dan, what about this idea from Daniel that there should be a comprehensive study and then you can look, both sides can look at this and make some determination about how to go forward?
I completely agree. I think the best decisions are based on solid facts. And I also want to echo what the senator just said, that I think there is a lot of common ground between these two positions. And quite frankly, I think we'd be in a better state as a country right now if there were more Republicans like Senator Benning in Washington, D.C. working on these issues. As the caller noted, the governor's climate commission, I believe yesterday, voted 20-1 to take a closer look at carbon pricing in Vermont. And throughout the series of hearings that they held across the state, carbon pricing was the top issue that they were being asked about and was being supported at these hearings. So clearly this is on the mind of Vermonters and they want to learn more. And I look forward to working with anyone at the State House next year to get more facts so we can have more clarity on this issue and move forward.
Let's talk to Tim, who's calling from Brandon. Hi, Tim. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just have a few comments to make. I live here in Brandon. A couple years ago, I came and built a small, efficient little home and was looking for the best way to heat it. And I chose a heat pump. And in the last 2 years, two of my neighbors on either side of me have put in heat pumps because they realize it's the best way for them to heat cost-effectively. And they've been moving away from oil. And my retired neighbor just next door, his furnace blew out last week. And, if the incentive is right, he will move towards heat pumps too and will further move away from oil. And so I think there's a lot of interest in people finding ways to move away from carbon footprint. And on that same note, I have an electric car. Several of my friends are on the cusp of getting electric cars as their second car, not as their first car, but as a backup kind of thing. And that there's that incentive that signal we get from public policy is important, and I think that's where carbon tax is so important. And the last thing I would say is just that, you know, this notion that we should do this at a federal level and that we should, you know, wait till the whole country comes on board is just patently false. Every time we've wanted to do something in any kind of social engineering way, it's needed to start small. It's needed to start with some pilot program that tests, you know, the feasibility and proves the viability. And that's why I think we're right. We're in the right place for Vermont to be the carbon tax leader. Thanks.
Okay, Tim, thanks very much for your phone call. Let's see if we can get a quick call in from George in Burlington. Hi, George. Welcome to the program. George, are you there? All right. We'll see if we can get George a little later. Let's turn to Jeremy in Hubbardton. Hi, Jeremy. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just had a couple of points, and I'd like to hear, especially from the proponents of the plan, as far as a rural economy is concerned, as far as those of us who don't live in a more urban environment, what would happen with this carbon tax, what I see, is primarily the cost of goods and services going increasing dramatically. Basically, you can't put, you know, like service fleets, like plumbers, you know, that sort of thing. And this includes farms who use fuel to, you know, do what they have to do to create food. The cost of goods and services would rise dramatically. I mean, you're not going to put these fleets in, you know, electric vehicles overnight, not even over the course of a 10-year period. But also, I'd like to hear what they have to say on the fact that with so many solar fields going up, wouldn't that lead to a reduction in overall electric costs by converting as much of the grid as possible over to solar?
Dan?
I want to hit on that's a great question. I appreciate that. One of the things the Essex plan does is focus on transforming our economy and pushing Vermonters towards resources that are already available. So, you know, there are electric cars out there on the market, and that's one of the reasons that we're going after this area. But, you know, in areas that where there are not readily available substitutes for fossil fuels, our plan right now is to exempt those fuels until the day comes when there are market solutions available for most folks. So, for example, you know, farm equipment, heavy machinery would be exempted under the Essex plan.
Dan, we're almost out of time, but tell us, what's your best hope for the 2018 session with this plan?
Our best hope is that the legislature recognizes that this is a economic boom for Vermont and moves forward with a stable and well-thought-out carbon pricing mechanism in 2018, or at the very least, we fund a thorough analysis of what this would mean for Vermont.
We'll be following this plan at the legislature very closely. Many thanks to our guests today, Senator Joe Benning and Dan Barlow of Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility. A great discussion. We really appreciate it. Thanks for being on the program.
Thank you,
Bob.